number of years ago, though, had a chance to go to Kansas City and get to know someone, and just the opportunity to travel with them and do a workshop together. And Coach Brown's going to come. He's going to be part of the message today. Coach, why don't you go ahead and come and grab your mic there. And thank you for coming and sharing with us today. We've actually now taken two trips together. The first trip, I certainly brought the brought the chuckle as they decided that it would be good to take me to a soul food restaurant. I like spinach. I had never had collard greens before. And they're all bragging about their collard greens. And I saw almost all of them throw a bunch of Tabasco sauce on there. And I never do that with my spinach. But anyway, they got a good chuckle that I was rather ignorant and had no idea what I was doing there. And we've talked over the last couple of years about doing this. We'll probably do it again when we start talking about how you and I really got to know each other, really past our differences. And we'll come back and talk about that at another time, because I think it's significant what God really did in our relationship. But one of the greatest reasons I wanted him to come and talk with us today, not only because it's Father's Day, but because of what he does in the city of Fort Worth and how he impacts the lives of really troubled kids that are find themselves in life-challenging situations. And so we're going to talk a little about that. Before we get that, I want to read the scripture, though. Because I think that there's a reason that the scriptures go on to really list their names. We're not going to go through them. But in chapter 11 and verse 10, it says this. It says, these are the leaders of David's mighty warriors. Say those words with me, mighty warriors.
Mighty warriors.
And really what today is about is not about David's mighty warriors. It's about Jesus's mighty warriors. Together with all of Israel, they decided to make David their king, just as the Lord had promised concerning Israel. The other part of this scripture that I think that it's important for us to take away is it's the church's responsibility. It's our job as part of God's kingdom to bring the life, the full life that Jesus promised to all mankind. Now, not all mankind's going to accept it, but it's our job to take it to them. And so that's where Coach Brown comes in a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your married, kids. That's why we start there.
Well, actually, I've been with my wife ever since I've been 12 years old, so I'm 45. So we've been together 43 years. My son is, which is right there, which is Patrick Dow, which is my, I have a son and a daughter. My daughter's in the military. She's been in there now for 16 years. She have three more years. She actually really be retired. The military just sending her to Hawaii as the top military person in Hawaii to lead some changes that they got going on in Hawaii. My wife couldn't be here. So, God tell us that our wife is our glory. My glory is not with me right now, but I'm here.
But we did put a picture up there of her.
Okay. I didn't see that. Yeah, but that's my wife. And right now she took on a really big responsibility. Her mother died like maybe 20 years ago. And she have a sister that's severely MHMR. And she been taking care of faithfully. A couple of years ago, her father got diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So she's at home taking care of him too. So when you see me, when my wife is not here, she's here, but you don't understand what I'm talking about. So
3 years ago, Bishop Blake called you on the phone.
I forgot. I better wish my daddy happy Father's Day. Have Father's Day, Pops.
Smart man. But Bishop Blake introduced us, actually, back in the gym back here. And that's when I first started learning about Southside. Yeah. And Southside, how old is Ministry of Southside?
Southside Youth Association is 45 years old. It was the first. How Southside came about back in the late 70s. Fort Worth, I don't know if a lot of people know the history about Fort Worth, but Fort Worth became the murder capital of the United States. And most people don't know that. They called it Murder Worth. So it was a lot of killing going on behind gangs and things of that nature. So three African-American gentlemen, one from Southside, one from Poly, and one from Eastwood, in order to bring the community together and the city together to stop gang violence, they actually created a program, after-school football program called, back then it was called Poly Hornets. I since then changed it. I've been a part of it. I played for them. The first year that they played, I actually played for them. But I've been a part of it now for over 44 years.
How many volunteers do you have roughly?
36.
And how many of those 36, how many went through the program or were connected at some point with the program before volunteering?
All of them except two.
Let that sink in. So it's a self-perpetuating program that really people come back and say, I want to volunteer and be part of what's happening. And now it's also connected, you've recently become connected with the police athletically. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, with a lot of things that's going on in Fort Worth, the question was out there, what can we do as a community to get engaged to where we can start bringing a positive influence of a connection? So I told them, instead of bringing things inside our community, let us develop a process on the outside, get with y'all, so this outside went in. Because like I tell the police department, anybody I talk to about kids have their biggest struggle when people that call their mentors, their teachers, whoever they may be, when they go outside of the community. Most of our struggles in our community is in the evenings and at night. It's not during the daytime. So, but if the program is designed from inside out, then no matter what that kid is going through, he can go down and he can always see that mentor right there in his neighborhood. And that makes a big difference is at 1 or 2 o'clock at night, if a kid is hungry, his mom then left him at the house or whatever the case may be, whatever that negative situation is, and he know that he got a coach that he can just walk up street and stay the night with. It makes a big difference. That changed the whole paradigm. And so in order for the community to be safe, regardless of what anybody say negative about the police department, what at the end of the day, that's their job. Their job is to protect and serve us. So we have to develop that bond. And a lot of times when kids are older, it's hard developing that bond because if their mind is already there, it's there. But if you take kids 5 and 6 years old, police department come out and play with them, have fun with them, take them on field trips, then they become a friend to that police officer. So they don't see him so much as a police as they see him as a coach. Because they call all the police officers coaches. So they see him as coaches, not so much as an officer. So I think it really breaks a lot of the negative things that's going on in our community about policing.
What different sports activities do you do as an organization?
We offer football, basketball, track, and cheerleading. And we do contact football and flag football.
And you may not realize is that they're cheerleading. This is kind of will be the hub of their cheerleading group. It has been in the past. Yeah. It's continuing. Yeah. We struggle to call it a sport, but
yeah.
You know, only until one of the girls hears that. And about
I hope my granddaughter don't hear that.
Yeah. But you can see we had a number of different pictures. If you guys just want to scroll through them so everybody can kind of see, you've really been able to affect kids. And talk about a couple of them. Last Father's Day, we had one that was here that played professional NFL, went on to, but I think you had someone at Loyola Marymount that was in basketball, someone at the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
So it's been effective over the years. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, most of the time when I guess I've been coaching so long, when I see a kid walk on the field, I can pretty much tell his parents that if you lead that kid and you got that kid, he'll actually go to the pros. I done had 8 kids to actually, from the age of 6 to start playing with me, and all 8 of them actually, well, all 6, 7 of them went to the pros. Last year when law, whatever that college was, one of the guys on there, he came off the bench, but he was one of the best players on the team. He played more. He actually played Pee Wee basketball. I mean, but he really didn't want to play basketball. He wanted to play football. So one day I was looking at his height, and I said, man, you ought to go in the gym and play basketball. I said, coach, ain't no basketball player. I said, well, I tell you what, that ain't a decision for you. I said, I'm going to talk to your mom and tomorrow. I'm going to come pick you up. The first 2 days I went to go pick him up, he was missing in action. So he had a brother. So I told his brother, I said, man, what are we going to do? I said, tomorrow when I come to pick him up, you just make sure he at the house. So he was at the house. I took him to play. He hadn't practiced or nothing. First game, because he didn't ever make practice because of his situation. So I made him go to the first game. And in the first game, that boy hit 16 points. And he'd been playing basketball ever since. So he wound up going there. Another kid that I coached, which is Pastor Rich was talking about, is Clint Solomon. Same thing when he walked on the football field. He went to Eastern Hills High School, graduated from Eastern High School, went to college, went to the pros. And right now he's playing what they call arena football for Texas Revolution. In the city of Fort Worth right now, ISD, I probably have 16 kids that I've coached. Is coaching at schools. Like I said, it's been a great blessing to touch some of these kids' lives. But one of the biggest ones was a guy by the name of D. Williams. He didn't actually play football for me. He played basketball a couple of games for me. But he Finished from O.D. White High School, went off to college and played for the Denver Broncos, and was one of the really big up-and-coming stars, but something happened in his life to where he was murdered, and I think he was murdered. I think he was in Colorado when it happened. Mm-hmm. So right now we're in the process of trying to honor him in some type of way, because when a kid have actually came in our community and was positive and a positive influence, then we need to be able to show our other kids that that kid was a positive influence, so they can have a role model to look down no matter what's going on in our community.
So we actually, our plan in preaching was actually a little bit different than we're doing this morning. Yeah. And a lot of that had to do with what transpired a week ago. And I don't, if you follow the news, you know, there was a police shooting down on Barrie. And that affected you much differently than it has in the past.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess the reason why this one affected me, because it was really at home. We was actually really born and raised in Stop Six. So the police shooting was actually really about 3 or 4 blocks from where we was raised at. And I deal with a lot of kids in that community. So watching it on Facebook, and a lot of people in that community was people that I actually personally knew, went to school with, was raised with. So it affected me there. But then we had a city council meeting. I went to the city council meeting, and it really affected me, because I'm not looking at whether the police was either wrong or right, because I really don't know that. That's between them and God, and I'm not going to even try to make a decision whether the police was wrong or right. But I do know one thing, a killing happened, and after that happened, anytime somebody loses a life in their family, it's going to have a profound effect on you, especially if you don't have answers. So in the city council meeting, I was telling my brother the other day that was the first time that I actually really felt I had a burden on my shoulder. And it, because at that city council meeting, you had for me to be able to watch grown men just cry. I'm talking about just cry. That mean that their heart was hurt. A grown man ain't going too much just crying in public. If you see a grown man crying in public, it's like whatever's going on in that situation, it really touched. So, and I'm not talking about one grown man, and I'm talking about elderly men's like in their 60s and 70 years old. And just to hear them cry, it really affected me in some type of way. So when me and Pastor got together to actually discuss the process, it was on my mind so heavy that I couldn't shake it. And even right now, it's really still on my mind heavy, because at the end of the day, we have to try to protect our community. But on the opposite side of that, we need the police too. So we got to figure out a way to be able to mend some relationships and be able to do some things so that we all can grow as one, versus us always arguing about things that doesn't matter. The thing that matters is we got kids that's right now that's growing up that's seeing all this negativity, and anything that's negative in a kid ain't good. I don't care which way you try to explain it or whatever. If it's negativity, as adults, we should protect our kids from anything that's going on negative. But
so we late 1700s, a guy by the name of Alexander Teitler, he did a thing called progression of democracy, or progression of nations. I want to put that in front of you. We talked a little bit about this, and we'll come back and talk a little more about it. And it really, what he did is he was a judge and a professor at the University of Edinburgh. And he did a study of nations up to that point, and he saw a cycle. And this just bears out so clearly, even with Israel and in Scripture. But it starts just simply with the nations start from a place of bondage to a place of spiritual faith. That bondage leads to an opportunity, and when the mass gets a hold of it, you have a nation that will turn towards spiritual faith. They go from spiritual faith to great courage. You see the Israelites obviously being in Egypt, coming out to a God that they would begin to serve. They got the law, but then they went into the promised land, that next generation, and they experienced great courage as they fought those battles. And from courage to liberty, to a place of abundance, from a place of abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back to bondage. Now we can look at that as where, this is the Facebook generation. We'll all have our completely educated opinions on what's right. So we could have that in regards to our nation, but we could also have that down to our state, our city, our own lives. And so from your perspective, talk a little bit, where do you see the challenges? Where do you see, you know, Fort Worth from your perspective in this, or?
I would say complacency. I think that if like I said, I'm a lifelong Fort Worth. So, you know, but if you look at all of the news things, anything that has to do with anything that's out of Texas, Fort Worth is one of the most livable, considered to be one of the most mm-hmm. livable places it is. I've had the privilege to sit on boards of that deals with race. And about 5 years ago, the government sent somebody down to Fort Worth, because what they did what you call a national survey to determine when cities are getting to the point to where they finna ball over and erupt. They have a structure that's the outline to say, okay, this is that city. They picked 66 cities in the United States. In Fort Worth, a lot of people don't know this, though. Fort Worth was one of those cities. And so the government sent some people down to have some conversations with some people in Fort Worth to see how we do not let this ball over into what we see in other cities. It was rejected from Fort Worth, and I'm saying that because if they brought it and we didn't accept it as a whole community, that mean it was rejected. But the reason why I'm saying that I feel is complacent, because we was complacent saying that that's not going to be us. And sometime in our life, when we're going through things with our relationship with our wives or whatever, we in our mind is saying, that ain't going to be us, which is complacency. If the system shows that it's going to be you, at least adhere to the system and try to do something, stop it from being you, and then think it's within your control, because it's not within your control. People in Fort Worth, us this in this room, don't control Fort Worth. We are a product of Fort Worth, but we don't control Fort Worth. So when we step outside of this room with our voices, with our voting privileges, with our decisions, we can help control and send forward in a different path. But for right now, I think we can place
it. Yeah, I would go even a step further. I think you're 100% correct with our actions. I mean, we have to put an action to a belief. If it's truly a belief, we'll do something different. If that means opening up a relationship with somebody that's profoundly different than you and making that work to doing what you've been doing for, you know, all these years with Southside. And because the reality is, you know, you spend untold hours a week with these kids, and up till 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whatever that was, you were holding a full-time job at the same time. And I think that is at the heart, the essence of igniting change. There's the prayer component. We need to pray. In fact, talk a little bit about how do you see the church in this whole mix? What, talk to us a little bit about that. Cause I know you have opinions here.
Well, the way I see the church, I have to speak on that from two different perspectives. First of all, my brother's a preacher. I have another brother as a minister. My father's a minister. I've been around preachers my whole entire life. I can only speak from being raised in Stop Six. We have actually had a church four houses down from our house. All while I was in Stop Six, I never once went inside the church. Never. And I didn't know why, but as I got older and I began to look back, because the church that we actually went to, while they was having church at that church, the church we was going to was outside of our church, was outside of our community. So we went outside of our community. So as I began to get older and began to deal with kids and things like that and dealing with some of the things in the community, I kind of frowned on the church a lot, because in my mind and in my heart, if the church is supposed to be a safe haven for the community, but the people in the community is not even going to it, then maybe we're not doing our job as Christians as far as what God really expects us to do. I don't think that a kid should, not only a kid, anybody, a homeless person, no matter who they may be, get up in a house right next door to a church and have to go somewhere else to eat, have to go somewhere else to feel love. To me, that theory don't make sense to me, because if we say that we are the church and all of us is one, then we ought to be able to help anybody in any condition. And a lot of doors is just not being opened. But once I came to this church, I seen it different. And I can only talk about my experiences with Pastor Rich. He'll allow you to mature at your own rate. I'm saying me. I don't know about nobody else, though. But he'll never push me. Whatever the case may be. If it's something that I'm uncomfortable with, he can tell me, well, we'll talk about that later. Or we'll deal with it later, whatever the case may be. And a lot of times what leaders do, they try to, because of titles, they try to push their congregation and push their people into titles. But at the end of the day, if you're not accepting the title because Christ, that title is not going to be worth what you got in the way. So to me, the church, again, just my whole focus on the church is that I don't know if we need to reevaluate it. I don't know how that process worked, but I do know one thing we need to do. We need to reach out to our neighbors, which is our next door neighbors, and see how we can get them into the fold versus calling people all across town trying to bring them a part of the fold.
Yeah, one of the things that really, over the years, that really challenged me in regards to Christianity is the church has really gotten good at telling the world how it's, well, all the things they're doing wrong and never actually engaging with the world. It doesn't mean that you have to become the world, but you got to get in and engage. There has to be some form of engagement relationally to move people toward what we would call as a nothing is impossible life. Because here's where I think as a whole the American church is at. I believe that we are, we've landed firmly on complacent or apathetic, and we're just waiting for Jesus to come back. And every time there's a tragedy, every time there's a big problem, the church just says this one little statement, well, Jesus is just that much closer to coming back. Now, I know none of you ever said that. When actually what will get Jesus to come back sooner is us telling people about him and engaging in the world that we live in. I want to walk through some characteristics, though, what I really believe of mighty man is and about. And I'll give the points, the scripture, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But first is the one dedicated to their leader. They were dedicated to David as a leader. I believe in the church, God is looking for men who will be dedicated to him. In fact, Romans 14 says this, says, if we live, it's to honor the Lord. If we die, it's to honor the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. Christ died and rose again for this very purpose, to be the Lord both of the living and of the dead. So there's this dedication that doesn't matter, alive or dead, we are dedicated to the Lord. And talk a little bit about a moment in your life, which was actually quite comical, that had to do with really kind of set you on a path of wanting to know and understand Jesus more.
Okay. Well, it was comical. It wasn't comical to my dad, but it was comical to me and my two brothers. We had been to a Baptist church our whole life. So I was used to a little shouting. I wasn't used to a whole lot of shouting. So my dad went to a Pentecostal church, and he took me and my brothers one night to a Pentecostal church. And when we went into the church, it was different because when we was going to the Baptist church, most of the Baptist people only shouted when something happened. You know, like the preacher say a good word or you have a good song, they would shout. But when we went to this Pentecostal church, they was just like shouting on silent. It wasn't nothing really, and you know, I'm looking like, I guess in my mind, you have to have a reason to shout. But as a kid, you view things out of your own eyes. So after everybody got through shouting and all that happened, at the end of the day, they had altar call. And when they called me and my brother and them up to altar call, again, we was Baptist. We wasn't Pentecostal. We didn't know that altar call was just a step for you, if you don't do the right thing at altar call, for you to go back to the upper room. We didn't know that. So we all went up there, you know, and everybody was up there. You know, the pastor would raise everybody's head back and they would touch them on the head. You know, they would shout, someone would fall and all that kind of stuff. So again, we didn't know that. So when he touched us, we just stood there. You know, and you just touching me, so anyway, we looked around about 15 or 16 of us didn't do whatever the process is supposed to be. And I put it like that because I still don't understand it. But so what they did, they took us with this in this back room. And when we walked this back room, at first we walked in, there wasn't nobody there. I guess the room was probably about this big. And it had like little places that where you can sit at, which again, we think and sit down. So we went off in there and we sat down, but we was the only three sitting down. Everybody else was on their knees praying. And we kind of started looking and they came, told us, y'all got to pray. So we start, which I'm not even going to lie, because we didn't pray. I know I didn't. I don't know what my other two brothers did. Because back then I wasn't a praying person. I just got on my knees and was kind of with my head down watching everybody. And so as the people was walking around the room and they was touching the people in the room, some of them, you know, start speaking in tongues or whatever you might say. And we noticed when they spoke in tongues, they could get up and leave. So, so me and my, now again, it didn't dawn on me and my brother that was with me, but my brother right there, I guess it dawned on him because he left us. He started speaking in tongues. And so he left us. So me and my other brother was still here. I guess probably the time was probably about three of us still in the room that hadn't been still there. And so me and my brother got to talking. He said, man, how do we get out of here? And my brother said, man, we got to talk that stuff they talk. I said, what you mean? He said, man, we got to speak in tongues. I said, man, I don't know nothing about no speaking in tongues. He said, well, just say something. Don't nobody else know what you're saying. So, man, the lady came over there and tapped my brother on his back. He put his head when I'm telling you he got to talking. That joker said something. I thought he was talking in tongues for real. Then I talked a little bit in tongues, so we got him walked out. But that was when I walked out because of me being a Baptist and then going to a Pentecostal church, seeing the difference. I wanted to know the truth because I didn't know if this was real. I didn't know if it was phony. I didn't know nothing. So I started reading the Bible, and the more I began to read the Bible, the more I began to study the Bible. Then God showed me that components of every, what we would call religion, components of it is true. But we separate who Christ is based on the components that we identify with. So, you know, if you identify with shouting, you believe shouting is more than this person getting baptized. If you identify with baptizing, then it's more than this other person. So, you know, but that's how I really actually got to really know Christ from my heart. And then the things that Christ does around me by people that's in my life, how if a negative person is in my life, I don't ask them to leave. God have always made a way to where if that person was a negative influence on me, God have always made a way that somehow, now it's not, it don't hinder our relationship or nothing. It's just somehow we don't see each other no more. But that's just who God is. And I recognize who God is for who he is. And I think that me and Pastor Rich was talking, I think that that's why I'm not stuck on a religion. Religion really doesn't matter to me because I recognize who God is in all of us. So
I just think what happened in that locked room is so awesome that we are going to dedicate a room. But here's the other thing about really characteristics of mighty men is they love their family. Dedicated to Jesus and then loving their family. And, you know, you grew up in an area of the world where family has deteriorated pretty quick. You didn't get married at 12 or 13, but you've been together since then. Listen to what Scripture says in Colossians. It says, since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults, and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And so when we talk about loving the family, if you can do this in the family, you can do it anywhere. That really is the proving ground. Yeah. Talk a little bit about, you know, your family experience growing up or in being married and really what that love means to you.
Okay. My dad was I got to start with him. My dad was a hard lover. And what I mean by hard, I mean hard. He was so hard one day, we didn't have a lot of money, but I didn't see us as poor back then because I guess I always had fun. So I guess when the Bible talk about riches, you can have riches two different ways. You can have riches in your heart or physically riches. I had a heart for riches because my family was a family. So I didn't really miss nothing. When I got older and I look back old, I'm like, I got my brother close. So we was kind of poor. But anyway, my dad was a type of father of the world. When I'm saying direct, I literally mean direct. One day he got up in a told me and my brother named James, he said, now y'all better not step out this yard. He said, I'm finna go to work. And I think daddy knew we were gonna do something. Cause I think it seemed like daddy just got on one street and made a U-turn. But the only thing that we did, we used to, when it rained, we would take them popsicle sticks and we put them at the end of the street because our street was kind of sort of like at an angle. And it was a race. So you put them down there and you run down there real, real fast to where the race is. And you put your legs, you sitting on like this, the curb, you sitting on the curb and the water running up under you. So when the popsicle stick, whichever popsicle stick got up under you first, then you won. Then you run back down there again. But it was fun to us. But anyway, when we did it, me and my brother were sitting on the curb like this. And so when dad came around the corner, our feet was just on the curb. We was actually in the yard. So he got out the truck. He said, son, and I tell y'all, don't go out this yard. And we confused as a kid because, daddy, we really ain't been nowhere. So he didn't explain to us why he whooped us, but he whooped us. Now, years later, he explained to us why he whooped us. And I'm glad he did because discipline is discipline. I'm a firm believer that through that. My dad and mama, I think they met when they was probably, I think my dad was probably like 16 or 17. My daddy, I know this way back now. My dad was 5 years older than my mom, so she couldn't have been no longer than 11 or 12. they stayed together up until my mama passed. My brothers, I think out of four of us, all of us been with our wives over 30 years. So from a marital and a family standpoint, we have a lot of, even my sister too, she's been with her husband, I think, over 30 years. So we have a lot of structure. And because of that structure, it makes it easy when me and my brothers is having conversations about just life in general, because we all have the same morals and we all have the same values. But as a father with my two children, my biggest thing was discipline. I don't care nothing about it. I didn't care nothing about the grades. My wife would get mad. Son or daughter come home with bad grades. She want a woman. They ain't a woman. She said, well, I said, let's make sure they do better. So I would just always tell my kids, now, whatever grades you got in school, you got to put them up. And I'm going to have to whoop y'all behind y'all mama. So, but every year it worked. They put their grades up. But my thing was discipline, because when I coach kids, if a kid is disciplined, you can get anything out of a kid. I don't care what it is. If he's disciplined, you become his friend. You can get anything. So to me, even though I know a lot of people say that parents shouldn't be their kids' friends, I disagree with that. I think that if you can be a kid friend, but still disciplining. To me, friendship means it's fun. And when a parent don't have fun with their child, that child is going to have fun with somebody else. And then when that child get older, you're going to be mad because you're going to be thinking, well, how did why he act? We act like this because he tried to be your friend, but you didn't befriend him. So to me, you know, family structure is very, very important. And I wish that even with dealing with kids, I wish that it was a way that every child that don't have a father in their life, I wish it was a way that we had connection with enough men to actually get in that, because to me, that's the biggest component that's missing in these kids' life. And I think that upon no matter what the circumstances is, a woman ought to allow a father to be in that child's life, because if they don't, and not saying that women can't do great by raising family, I know a lot of kids that play sports with me, their mother raised them. But I tell all of them, I bet you if that boy had a dad in his life, he would be even better than what he is. That's just, you got to have that balance. That's what life is about. Life is about based on good and evil. And to me, you strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes where mom is weak, dad is strong. Sometimes where dad is strong, mom is weak. And that balance is what balanced that kid out to be able to go through those walks in life when you run into those problems.
You know, I've said this before, you get away with things with these kids that you work with that, you know, the majority of the planet would never get away with, because he takes discipline seriously. And in more and more our world, discipline is something that's non-existent. We work around the different things that we can. We say, well, my feet are on the road, but my butt's in the yard.
Yeah.
And then we argue with those who said, no, you need to be all the way in there.
Yeah.
And so you've really dedicated to making sure these kids get moving in that place of discipline.
Yeah.
Well, so for the sake of time, all right. So the third thing is simply encourages the church. Paul said this. He said, you should imitate me just as I imitate Christ. So there's got to be a model for others to see. And one of the things that really really struck me in our conversations was how you have been working towards really those four C's of making sure that a kid has in these four influences in their life.
Yeah.
And talk about that just a little bit.
Well, like I said, again, a lot of kids that when I was just doing sports, it was a lot of educators, mentors, or whatever the case may be, was a part of the kid's life. But when the kids came to us and we started the mentoring program, I didn't see no growth. So I didn't know if they weren't mentors or they weren't teachers or whatever their structure looked like. So what I did is try to create an opportunity to work. Because in my mind is that if everybody's connected, then it's better for the kids. So I come up with this idea about the four C's, which is a coach, a clergyman, a cop, and a counselor. So from my concept is, when that kid leave out at a very young age, most of the time the person that kid is going to connect with is the coach. Because if he's too young to go to school, a lot of these kids are playing sports now, getting in some form of sports, 3 and 4 years old before they even go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So he got that with that coach. I think the next thing as the kid get a little bit older is going to be the clergyman. I know when I was raised, we actually was going to church on a consistently basis. So we had a connection with the clergyman. The next thing was a counselor. When you go to school, the counselor is the person that actually is supposed to guide the kid, tell the kid what field you're going to go into in the whole nine yards. And then the what you got, the coach, the counselor, and then the fourth one was, one I forgot,
cop.
The cop, because the cop actually is the, to me, it's a safe haven of the community. You know, if the whole thing behind policing is it's supposed to make the community feel safer. We should never have to walk out our door and feel like we can't go across the street or we can't go around the corner because of unsafe community. And the police department job is to protect and serve. So I think if they protect us and they serve us, I think that that would no longer be there. So what I found out is that a lot of these things, kids have them in their life, but none of them connects together. So to me, it would be like, if I'm the coach and Pastor Rich is the clergyman, we got a contact. So if that kid is at church on Sundays and have a behavior problem or whatever the case may be, and by me being at this church, eventually me and him will have a conversation. Say, hey, man, don't you know that so-and-so. So we'll watch him. Then we go to the schools and connect with the counselor, and then we get the cop included. So therefore, that kid is touched in every aspect of his life. And when a kid is touched in every aspect of life, most kids that you walk up on that's doing something bad, most of them that's respectful is going to jump to attention quick, even though they were doing bad. But when they see you, they're going to jump. So let you know they want to be taught respect, but because they haven't been taught respect, they don't know how, their actions is just different. So that's what I think that, what this program that I'm doing is, we tie all four of those together, and we actually, through the mentoring program that's during the course of the year, the cop, the clergyman, the coach, and the counselor, at least once a year, is going to have a relationship with that child, so that child can be touched in every aspect of his life.
We even saw that, a couple months ago. Remember, one of our Tuesday night guys were here, and I noticed you were jabbering at it pretty good.
Yeah.
And I won't obviously divulge what you're talking about, but that was the combo. You needed a little bit of, discipline and guidance there, right? So then the last one is, there's an impact on a society. Of course, these guys that we read about, David's men, they impacted society. The church should impact society. Now, the scripture, we talk a little bit about the scripture because I think it's a good place for us to stop and evaluate our life. Is there some form of impact that we're having? Jesus said these words. He said, because they were actually challenging his impact, by the way, in Matthew 11, he said, the Son of Man, on the other hand, feasts and drinks. And you say he's a glutton and a drunkard and a friend of tax collectors and other sinners. But wisdom, and notice these words, so powerful. But wisdom is shown to be right by its results. There should be some change that happens. And so Jesus, when they were challenging him, he just said, hey, wisdom is shown by the results. Just look at the results. You can call me whatever you like, but what kind of results are being shown? And so this question I had asked you earlier, you get to the end of your life and you turn around and you look back at the survey of the years that God gave you, family, Southside organization, what do you want it to look like?
Well, actually, my mom passed 5 years ago. And when she passed, I guess because our family was so close, I wouldn't say it destroyed our family, but I did say, I will say issues start creeping up. And when issues start creeping up in your family through death, if you don't know how to handle them, your family can really, you be like having brothers and sisters that you ain't seen in a long time. So what I did, I created a model, a family model. And so the first thing that I did is ask my family one word that they think that family mean. And so all of us, it's 9 of us, so all of us gave a word. The amazing thing was all of our word was a different word. But anyway, what I did, I took that and made it out of family creed. So anytime we together, whatever you say that is, you got to amplify that. So if one of my brothers said that the most important thing is love. So when we had a family function, his job is to show love in spite of anything else. Another one was long-suffering. So everything that we had, mine was more or less patience. So, but everything, every word that we did, we acted out. So after doing that, we was able to, through that process, we was able to deal with the death of my mom on a whole new different level. Mm-hmm. To be able to talk about some things that my sisters had went through in life that we never knew about, we was able to talk about those things. So it actually healed our family. So in the process of healing our family, God don't bless us to take something that's a jewel and hide it. He bless us to where when we find the jewel, to share it. So what I did, I created a model, and this is what this model is. But the model actually would walk every family. And again, it's not a model that I'm saying that it's going to work with every family. Every family is different. But I think when we have resources before us to help, so what my legacy would be, what I would love for my legacy to be, is that this model go from my generation to my next, my kids' generation to my grandkids' generation all the way down. Because I know that as long as they have a structure and as long as they have a model, a lot of things that's destroying our family won't destroy it. The devil is at our family. He's not at, we sometimes think the devil is at us. He's not at you. He don't care nothing about you. He just know that if he can get you, he can, especially from a man's standpoint, he can get your, make it easy to get his wife. Then it makes it easy to get your children. So if we don't have no structure, we allow the devil unconsciously to come in and rob us of our joy, rob us of everything that really inspires us to do good. He robs us of that. And then the third generation is, to be honest with you, what we see now. So we have to definitely develop some type of structure. But if I had a legacy that I would want to leave, that's what I want to leave.
So we're gonna pray here in a moment, and we didn't know if we'd have time for you to go all the way through that, but he showed it to me, and it's pretty incredible. If you want a copy of it, you can write to, which we have them right on there. What is your thing called?
What? I can give you a copy of it.
I'll email it to him. Okay. I'm going to tell them right on their welcome card if you want a copy of it.
I'm saying that because I don't answer my
phone. Family model down on your welcome card. We'll send it to you. Make sure you can have it. But if one of the biggest reasons I wanted Coach Brown up here is because if you haven't figured out his heart for family, you've really missed it this morning. And what we need as not just a nation, because certainly our nation needs it, but even East Fort Worth, South Fort Worth, we need healthy families. And I believe that as, you know, your family is healthy at whatever level your family's healthy, mine's at whatever health family is. But what's so great at how God is using you is you're taking those who are in broken families and you are extending that model toward them so that they might be the next generation that would say, we can move from bondage to spiritual faith, to courage, to liberty. Because the church is to help people move from bondage to spiritual faith. And I believe that's the essence of igniting change. And I would hope that every person that's a part of Bethel would ultimately be able to say, I am igniting change this way, and be able to answer that question. Now, obviously, yours was long and drawn out, but it was good that it was that way. And I'm going to have you pray for that. And I just love the way you pray. And then we're going to pray for him because we're going to talk just about one other thing really quick. Go ahead and just pray. If everyone just bow your heads and let's just pray over him.
Yeah. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Lord, forgive us this day as we forgive the others. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from all that which is evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.